Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. I want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
And then Smith takes it back. Here comes Smith down the left side. Smith in front. Backhand shot. Score! Second of the game for Jonathan Marchessault.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
And that'll do it. Warriors win it 119-106. And they take a 1-0 lead in this best of seven Western Conference final. Golden State has now won 8 straight game ones, 14 of 15 now under head coach Steve Kerr.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
And we waited before the series started, we won 7 out of 8, and we weren't going to adjust until, someone beat us. And we had played well with that lineup, and it got us to this point. So, we have to weigh that decision.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080, The Fan.
It is 12:02 in the Rose City. It is time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. Brandon Sprague, Andy Dirt Johnson in with you on this Tuesday afternoon. How we feeling?
I think you're feeling okay, unless you're a Mariner fan. Any non-Mariner fans out there probably having an okay Tuesday, but Mariner fans, not so much. I got a text from a buddy who's a Mariners fan who he left work and went to a bar.
Is it really that big of a deal?
This is a pretty tough blow. Like, you signed this guy to a $200 million contract. You were expecting him to lead you to the postseason. He has yet to do that. Not saying it's all on him, but
this is year three of him in Seattle.
This is year five.
Oh, year five. Yeah,
year five in Seattle. He's 35.
It's been 5 years since he signed.
Right.
No, it hasn't.
Yes, it has. We looked it up before the show. He is 35 years old. And
year five?
Right? So you get the benefit.
I could have swore it was a Yankee 2 years ago.
The suspension doesn't kick in, or it kicks in right away. And I thought initially, well, maybe it'll kick in when he's off the DL. So that would be a tough blow because he's out for the rest of the year. But one note that I did forget that I saw from Rosenthal on Twitter, no postseason. So you are now faced with the possibility. Now, I get the AL West is tough. There is the chance that Robinson Cano could come back mid-August if they want him back, and we'll see how that all shakes out. But he could come back mid-August, help you get to the playoffs and break that 16-year drought.
Get a wild card spot.
And then you would
can't play in the one-game playoff.
Not be able to play him in the playoffs.
Yeah, that sucks.
That would be this.
That's
is
not good.
This is not good. This is not good in any way, shape,
well,
or form.
Well, I saw from TJ Quinn, who works for ESPN, he's been on like a tweet storm because when it came out that he tested positive, everybody instantly goes, oh, he's doing steroids. Oh,
right.
He got caught.
Right.
And then he sent out his own response, which basically, to sum it up for you, if you haven't read it, he went to a certified doctor in the Dominican. He used a substance that helps him.
Red flag.
But he says it wasn't for performance enhancing, to which TJ Quinn then followed that up with his announcement and said, Cano says he took it from a doctor and didn't realize what it was, but drug policy says Major League Baseball has to prove intent to mask, which they apparently did. So he says it was to help him recover, not to give performance enhancing. That substance that he took, and I'm not going to try to say it, and who cares, is basically used to cover up that you did use something.
Yeah.
And TJ Quinn says Major League Baseball has to prove that's why you're using it before they say you test positive.
Yes.
Or suspend you, excuse me. And they did.
It was a furosemide. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that.
I was trying to move on without us trying to do that.
Yeah, so that if you just Google what it's used for, it is used to treat fluid retention and swelling caused by congestive heart failure, liver disease, kidney disease, and other medical conditions. That is the medical use for it.
Look, let's call a spade a spade. The dude probably did steroids of
and
some
he used
sort,
this
and
to
he
mask
used
it.
This to mask it.
That's the funny thing. Like
you lose me when you talk about the Dominican. When you go to the Dominican, you've lost me. I do not believe what you're telling
me. All sorts of red flags are going up. And I think it's important to note that because when it was initially reported, you're right, everybody saw PED suspension. You thought, oh, Cano's on steroids. But he did not test positive for a steroid. So the argument I think Mariner fans were trying to tell themselves, and I think every baseball fan would do this if he was a player you liked or a guy on your team, oh, he just took a medicine that wasn't approved. It's on the banned substance list, but he just made a stupid mistake. But the TJ Quinn stuff, I think, is great to point out because it's not necessarily the case at all. Like Major League Baseball, when they see this come up on a positive test, they have to prove.
They don't freak out and instantly
It's not an automatic ban like a steroid is. If a steroid shows up, boom, 80-game ban, we don't want to hear any reason why you took it or what your reasoning was. But if this comes up, Major League Baseball has to prove that you are using it not in a medical way, not in a mistake way, but you were using it to mask the use of steroids because that's one of the main uses, and it's the reason that it is on the banned substance list. And if Major League Baseball was able to prove it to the point that Robinson Cano dropped his appeal, I have a feeling they have a rather strong case against him.
Yeah, so Robinson Cano, he was already out with his broken hand injury for 8 weeks, and now he's been suspended for 80 games. It was reported initially that it wouldn't start until the end of his injury, to which I came into work, and you filled me in that you had seen on Twitter that, no, this starts now.
Well, so that's the way it should be. It should kick in after you're off the DL.
Yeah, he shouldn't be given 80 games on games he's already going to miss. All the games you're going to miss of injury, you don't start it until the end of that. And then when you're about to play, boom, you should be out.
Right, because if you just calculate 6 to 8 weeks is kind of the estimated. He fractured a bone in his hand. So he estimated about 6 to 8 weeks to get back from that. And what is that, ballpark, 45 games? Maybe four,
probably close in that. Yeah,
somewhere range. In between 40 and 50 games that he was going to miss with or without the suspension. He was already going to miss half of these. So if you would have added that on top of the suspension after the DL stint, you're done for the year and you're not coming back. So they got that benefit, but this might be the most Mariner thing ever of them like finding a way into the wild card and then
they're having a good year,
not having Robinson Cano in the lineup.
Like you're right in the thick of it in your own division, which is tough with the way the Angels have played this year and the Houston Astros being the Houston Astros. You're in the thick of it, and your $200 million plus player comes out, breaks his hand, and then a week later, the test comes out that he tested positive and he's suspended for 80 games. This is what I don't get about baseball players. You know how I feel about steroids. I've never been shy about it. I think we exaggerate this stuff so much.
Sure. Well, especially Mariner fans today, because you already have Nelson Cruz and D. Gordon on your roster.
Right.
I mean, I get the out. I can't believe he did. You're rooting for Nelson Cruz and D. Gordon. How is it any
roided ears?
Like, how is it any different?
I just let athletes try to be healthy, whether that's HGH, whatever it's going to take. I don't care. Just put them out there. But the rules are the rules, and he has failed this test.
Yes.
What I'm confused on with pro athletes and use of this stuff is your defense is that you use this to help you, right? It's not, I wasn't doing anything
illegal.
It was
a medication.
Medication. You have access to the most primo doctors in the world, and you're going to the Dominican?
Well, that and the banned substance list is well known by every Major League Baseball player.
Sure, but guess what? If you go to one of the best doctors for treatment, they are smart enough because they are the best doctors to know you can't use this substance.
Yeah, either way, there's no excuse for this. And maybe they have good doctors in the Dominican. I've never been to the Dominican Republic, so I don't know anything about
the healthcare system. I think we understand the Dominican when we talk about baseball, right?
It makes you chuckle because even if it wasn't a masking agent, everybody knows, and this has been all over today, Major League Baseball makes every player aware of every substance that you cannot take, whether it's a steroid, whether it's a masking agent, whether it's something that could be considered a cheat, whatever. Every player knows the things that they can and cannot take, and yet he still took this drug. And the doctor he visited, if he's telling the truth and it wasn't a mask or steroid, if he's telling the truth, then the doctor he went to was terrible and didn't give him the advice he needed.
Well, let's burn his jersey today. Isn't that the proper approach?
I will say I wish that there were mechanisms for teams to get out of deals for positive steroid tests.
Oh, you would want to get out of this deal?
I think Mariner fans would get out of this deal in a heartbeat. he's still got, I mean, what was it, a 10-year, $200 million contract? He still has five. He's going to be playing until he's 40 in Seattle.
What's he doing statistically this year?
That's not, I mean, his numbers are okay, but.
Why would you get out of the deal then? Because, he'll be back next year.
Yeah, do you really want to pay him another $100 million over the next 5 years? The guy's making like $25 million a year.
What did they do with Josh Hamilton? They basically paid him off to go away, didn't they?
Yeah.
With the Angels?
I think there's buyout mechanisms you can use.
I don't know
if you trade a guy to another team, you can. A lot of times you have to pay the bulk of that salary, but it gets off your books in certain ways.
Gotcha.
But there's not like a wave of the magic wand. I would like to see that for steroid users, though. Not just Cano, but other users as well.
Yeah.
Like, dude, you cheated. You're out for 80 games. We don't want you anymore. See you later.
Well, good news, Mariner fans. Portland will have a baseball team soon. Let's find out what's on tap.
Nerd and Sprague know what's brewing.
I'm not paid to be bold. I'm paid to be right.
There's a lot of sporting events that you say, oh, I got to go do that.
This is What's on Tap, poured by Pelican Brewing Company, born at the beach on 1080. The Fan.
What's on Tap brought to you on The Fan by Pelican Brewing Company. Born at the beach online at pelicanbrewery.com. I'm going out there this weekend.
Are you going out
this week?
City?
In 2 days.
There you go. Go hang out at Pelican.
I'll be off on Thursday and Friday. Gonna go hang out at Pelican, climb the dune, do beach things. We got a good show. I showed up extremely late today. Walked into the building at around 11:20.
Hey, you had a feel. You were daddy daycare today.
I was on chaperone duty for my my daughter's kindergarten class. Thankfully, though, there were 12 other chaperones that volunteered, so my group was only two kids.
No, that's not bad at all.
It's my daughter and one of her little buddies.
It's a pretty easy day.
Yeah, it's pretty easy. Let's see. We'll talk about the Warriors. I went into it back and forth with a couple people last night on Twitter, and it was interesting their angle. Because I put a tweet out that I didn't think was insinuating what they were responding to. And then it kind of got into a whole other thing as they take game one. Pretty convincingly. I mean, outside of that hot start of Houston, like 11-3 or whatever.
A little back and forth, but
you knew they were winning that game. Pretty big news for Michael Jordan. There's a documentary coming about MJ. And I'm wondering how this is going to shape or change perception even more for him. I actually think this is going to help him even more. I didn't even think that was possible. But then I saw the trailer and I go, oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
Here we go.
Well, he's actually really stayed out of the limelight. And the guy, I mean, he's not on TV. He doesn't do interviews.
No.
You never hear from him.
Well, he doesn't say anything when he does.
True. So hopefully he does in this.
Well, he's running a franchise into the ground in Charlotte.
That's true. He's very busy.
That he is, Jason Swigard.
Very busy.
Yeah, I mean, all the 20-something NBA writers, I love that they have these articles out, and I'm just wondering how much of Michael Jordan games they really watch, because you can find everything on YouTube, but going to find, like, five games does not give you the opinion of saying you knew Michael Jordan playing.
Right.
If you went back and you watched full seasons, okay, I got you. But I think people like that are going to benefit greatly from getting an inside look at Michael Jordan. We'll talk about the NBA draft lottery. That is tonight. Boy, I wish the Blazers were participating.
Hey, we're drafting 24th, all right?
The draft lottery's fun.
Hooray. I do. I love it. I love draft lottery night.
See what your odds are, where you're going to end up. We will talk a little bit about the Blazers. What do you think their draft needs are, and how big is the draft for a team like Portland? Or would you just like to see them be active in the trade market? NFL true or false at 1:30. May talk a little college football today. John Cena does a move that a lot of men can relate to. But are we buying that it's genuine? Because I'm not sure his ex-fiancée is. And we've got audio on that one. He was on the Today Show talking about that. We got a good show. We'll talk a little Boston, Cleveland as well. Got a good show. We're on Twitter at Dirt and Sprague, at Theodore Johnson, and at Brandon Sprague. And we'll start with the Golden State Warriors. They beat the hell out of the Houston Rockets. And yeah, it's a wrap. They're going to win a championship again. You got Dirt and Sprague on The Fan. There seems to be two schools of thought following last night's basketball game. Not much of an in-between. The two schools of thought, I would say, are the people who reside in, yep, this isn't going to end anytime soon. And then the other side, I love watching this. This is beautiful. This is such pretty basketball. And I don't know where you reside out there. Maybe you reside in just admiring and enjoying what you're seeing Golden State do. Or maybe you're tired of it and you know the reality of this league says as great as this league currently is with their players, there is not a team equipped enough to stop what Golden State is doing. They have not had one series since Kevin Durant joined them last year go to six games.
No, not yet.
I believe they've only lost three times.
I think they're 28-3,
I
believe, now after last night's win.
So, you know, I don't know where a lot of people fall in, but, you know, I tweeted last night, KD is 28, Draymond's 28, Steph is 30, KD actually might be 29, Klay's 28, whatever. But their big four are all 30 or under, and you just go, this ain't ending anytime soon. And I love this league. I will always love this league. I will watch the regular season. I get a lot of joy out of it. But when you get to this point in the season, the conference finals, and you got a team that's just so dominant and so damn good and better than everybody else, you're getting a lot of fans out there that kind of look at this league, and I don't blame them, and going, well, what's the point? That's a hard thing for me to admit as a basketball guy. But I don't blame people from last night seeing what happened last night and having that opinion. And then after I tweeted that out, I got people immediately telling me that I'm an idiot because that's the most beautiful basketball ever played, to which I never disagreed with that point.
They can both be true. I think when you're watching them in the moment and you see what they do last night to a team like Houston that won 65 games and a lot of NBA fans believed had a legitimate chance of winning this series, and maybe some still do even after last night, when you're watching it in the moment, you're in awe of how they move the ball, how they play defense, how it just it flows so perfectly. And you can have a performance like that where Steph Curry didn't really make a whole lot of noise and was bad on defense, and you still win a Western Conference Finals game by 13 points. But I think when the game is over, the reality smacks you in the head like a 2x4 of reminding you, and this is what I've argued all year, no one can beat Golden State. I think we forgot it throughout the course of the year. Maybe we didn't want to believe it. Maybe it was wishful thinking. I don't know. But all year, I didn't understand this. You know, this team could beat Golden State, or maybe that team could knock off Golden State. I get that they were banged up. I get that they had moments where they sleptwalk through NBA regular season games. But come playoff time, when this group is healthy, I'm sorry, there's no collection of basketball players that can hang with them. And it's not just the fact that they're more talented than everybody else. It's the style in which they play, and I thought that was the main takeaway from last night, is that Houston can compile more stars, and they can add arguably one of the best point guards in the history of the NBA and Chris Paul to their lineup. What they cannot match with Golden State is the ball movement, the style of play, and the defense in which they're able to go out and have in a game one of a series. And all of those were on display last night. And yes, it's beautiful. Yes, it's a lot of fun to watch in the moment, but it leaves you extremely hopeless as an NBA fan. I said, right, when Durant signed in Golden State, this will be good for the league if somebody beats them. If somebody does the New York Giants, knocks off the 17-0 Patriots, this will end up good for the NBA, and nobody sniffed them yet.
Well, you know, the other part of that, like for the crowd that loves it, and I get it. I do as a basketball fan. They play the most unselfish style of basketball you could ever ask any team, whether they have superstars or not, to play. They love to pass the ball. They don't over-dribble. Klay Thompson can get 60 points on like 8 dribbles in a game. It's unbelievable.
Right, right.
It's everything James Naismith would want. But it's pretty to a point. And what I mean by that is their style of play can be pretty from the start of the game to the end. But when they're up 20 points on a team, how many people realistically are sticking around to continue to watch a beatdown?
Oh, let's keep watching this blowout.
You're not. Like, that's just being real. You're not. You're Netflix and chilling. You're HBO. You're getting out in the weather. Whatever the situation, that's a point where you go, okay, well, it's done. Like, I saw pretty basketball, and nobody stands a chance against what they're doing. The funny part last night, the other side, I thought Houston had a shot to win game one. I did. Mm-hmm. And they played like it right away, and then Golden State quickly countered, and you go, oh, man, Golden State's only down 3.
Well, first half was a great back and forth half.
It was a good back and forth.
A ton of fun to watch.
What I enjoyed was seeing all these people on social media and listening to Reggie Miller and Chris Webber, and even at halftime, you would think they didn't watch the Houston Rockets play basketball this year. Like, the shock factor of them playing ISO, Did you not watch?
That's what they do.
The best team in the NBA? Did you miss that memo? Because I've watched plenty of Houston Rocket basketball. James Harden, I saw one media member, Jordan Schultz, who works for Yahoo. He's been on the show before. He tweeted, Houston not doing what got them so much success this year. And I chuckled. I'm like, dude, this is literally what got them success this year. Do you know who the two leading players in the entire league are on frequency percentage of ISO basketball?
Let me guess, Chris Paul and James Harden?
And you'd be 1,000% right, my man. Those two players led the league. On the same team, they led the league in ISO basketball frequency.
And that's what they did last night. They traded off going one-on-ones, basically.
And it's easy to see that now because game one just happened and say, that's not going to beat Golden State in the postseason. I would agree with that. But, like, being surprised by it, how many times did Chris Webber or Reggie Miller run their mouth about, no ball movement? No ball movement. I know, Reggie. That's what they do.
Right.
They are predicated on mismatches and ISO basketball.
Because they're
taking advantage of their ISO basketball.
Well, they're both great one-on-one ISO basketball players, Harden and Paul are. I mean, there's not many people in the league that can stop them. But then you go against a team like Golden State that does it. There was a stretch, I want to say it was in the third quarter, where Golden State, it felt like, was starting to take control of the game and kind of up, you know, in that 9-10 point range.
Well, their third quarters have been amazing this
season. I mean, they come out of the locker room and they blitz teams. And there was a stretch of five or six straight possessions where Houston would come down and, whether it was Harden or Paul going one-on-one, then it was Gordon going one-on-one a couple of times, Ariza or Mbah Mute chucking up a shot, and it just wasn't pretty basketball. And then on the other end, you would get Durant to drive or Draymond Green to set somebody up, and it would end up in like a Klay Thompson wide open, let me take three rhythm dribbles before I take this wide open shot. And the ease in which the two teams were getting shots off, my jaw dropped to the floor. It's like, here's Houston struggling with every look, and they ended up shooting 45% for the night, and they were close. But then you go to the other end, and it felt like outside of some, I mean, Durant made a lot of tough shots, but that's just who Kevin Durant is.
Well, they're tough in the sense of maybe the body angle.
Right, but he's
6'11". People that are 6'5" guarding him.
He's going to get it over you, but at least there's a hand there. But then there would be so many times where there was just nobody within 5-6 feet of somebody, and it's Klay Thompson taking a wide open three. What do you think's going to happen with Klay Thompson taking a wide open three?
Right, right.
The ease on each end. And look, part of it is ball movement, and part of it is also really good defense. That Houston can do that against certain teams in the NBA and get away with it and be okay. You can't get away with that outside of picking on Steph Curry, which they did a ton last night, and James Harden took a lot of took advantage of him. Outside of that, there's not many defensive weaknesses on Golden State. They're a great defensive team, so you can't get away with one-on-one basketball in that style.
I thought it was like watching a cat play with its dinner and a mouse. I thought it was a team that knew we're not even playing that great of basketball. Like, they were playing good basketball, but not that great, and they were tied at half. And they know they can step it up another notch. More from Mike D'Antoni. Somebody asked him what the biggest concern for him is. Is it Kevin Durant in this series? And he had an interesting answer. We'll do that next. All right, 12:34 on The Fan. This summed it up pretty well, I thought, from Tom Haberstroh. Game one dribbles. Houston, 1,105. Golden State, 812. Game one passes, Houston 226, Golden State 283.
That sums it all up.
Dribble, 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 dribble. No pass, no dribble, ball movement. Pretty well sums it up.
Yep.
Also, Kevin Durant is a cheat code for Golden State.
That he is.
If we didn't figure that out last year, I think it's pretty evident at this point now in year two, having Kevin Durant, I just don't know. Unless you get some, like, if Kawhi Leonard and LeBron go to Philly with Simmons and Embiid,
right?
You really can't tell me how you combat this lineup. The double teams can't do it. Sure as hell can't do a triple team. You can maybe show, but then even the way this team is disciplined in their ball movement, you show a double, they're still going to be able to kill you on a show.
Mm-hmm.
Mike D'Antoni was asked last night about Kevin Durant and how concerned he is about KD, and this is what he had to say.
Is it discouraging to you to see James score 41 points and you still lose by double digits?
No, I'm going to just go talk to him. He needs to get about 55 next time, so and that would take care of it. I'll just have to tell him that.
Well, that is not Mike D'Antoni talking about Kevin.
By the way, did you see James Harden's quote today?
Yes, somebody, was it the one on KD?
No, he had one about his team, basically. He was like, you know, I can't do it all by myself. Neither the guys.
Well, he's not necessarily wrong. I'm not telling you that the way they play is not fun, but it's led them to where they are this year. So there's an element of what he's saying of, you guys got to hit your shots.
Sure.
Like, Gerald Green, you got to go out there. You got to hit your shots. Don't get into foul trouble. Eric Gordon, you got to be far more consistent. You are a really big third member of this team. Clint Capella, I don't know if he was underutilized, but Clint Capella usually has a bigger impact on a game. Maybe that's a credit to Golden State. The thing I was going to say about Golden State in reference to Mike D'Antoni is, there's nothing I think they can change. If you want to put Capella on KD, I think KD's going to abuse him.
I'll go right by him.
Green, it doesn't matter. I've seen a lot of people scream for adjustments to be made. And one listener says, you know, Brad Stevens labeled the genius because of in-game adjustments. Why can't Houston have in-game adjustments? To which I would just say, Brad Stevens is making in-game adjustments against the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Right.
Making in-game adjustments against Golden State is a far, far tougher task. And then I would also follow that up with, what adjustment would you make? If I tell you, Dirt, you're going to have a seven-month season and you're going to have success.
You win 65 games.
For 6 3/4 of the season, 6 months and 3/4 of it out of a seven-month season. And then in that final quarter, I tell you, you have to adjust and change the style of your play. Do you think you're even capable of doing that?
No, probably not. I mean, this is his style, and that's their system. And you can't change it at this point. You know, the Harden saying he needs more help from other guys. I understand it because he had 41, and then the only other guys, I mean, he had a couple other guys in double figures, Paul, Capella, and Gordon. Capellas were all around the rim. Gordon made a couple of threes, and Paul was okay last night, but nothing spectacular. He only had 3 assists. Part of that is on Harden, too, finding guys and getting guys open looks and maybe involving them in the game a little bit more. I mean, he does it really well with Capella, but a lot of those are just lobs around the rim. You're going around a pick and roll, you know, and somebody has to show to try and stop Harden, and Harden lobs it up and Capella dunks it. Outside of that, of his 7 assists, I would argue 5 of those were Capella dunks, and he probably only had 2 other assists on the rest of the night. So not everybody has the one-on-one game of a James Harden, and that's where I think part of that, having other guys step up and play better, falls on him. For the Brad Stevens adjustment thing, we'll see what kind of adjustments he can make if he gets out of the East Finals against Golden State, because I'd be willing to bet
that series
will be a bloodbath. They will get blown out in every game. And we won't be saying Brad Stevens is a genius anymore.
Well, and that's I think that's the other part of Golden State is, if for all the people that tell me that, well, Golden State raises the bar, or Golden State should be making all these teams strive to be better, I actually agree with that opinion, that they make other teams want to be better. That's great. You should want that. It's good to have that barometer. I think the way they came together is one of the bigger phenomenons to happen in pro sports. You won 73 games with a most organic group, and then you lost game 7 in the finals, and because you lost game 7, it led them to text Kevin Durant, the second best player in the league, and say, hey, come join us.
Help us out.
After beating him, by the way, in the Western Conference Finals, and he agreed to it. You're just not going to get that very often in pro sports. What I do wonder is, for all the people that tell me this is great style of basketball and this is good, Is it a beautiful brand? Yes, it is. But if it's Boston Golden State, how much do the ratings go down?
Oh, it's going to be terrible. There's no need to watch that series.
No. Not even like your personal viewing pleasure. Just, I'm wondering if we can try to sum up sports fan. I think those ratings are going to drop at least 20%.
Yeah, I'd be willing to bet that. No LeBron James factor.
No LeBron.
And no Kyrie, no Gordon Hayward
and
for
people
Boston.
Know, yeah, exactly. Exactly. People know that this is going to be a quick series,
right,
if it's Boston.
Right.
It could be Cleveland again, and then we'll see. But
right, we'll know more about that tonight, depending on what happens in game 2.
I just think LeBron moves the needle. People hate him. People watch him. It doesn't matter. You know he's going to lose that series, but you're still going to tune in because
he's the best player on the planet.
Will he have 50 and 20 tonight? I don't know.
Well, and that's where, you know, just looking at the future of the NBA, I understand, you know, when we had some people tweet us earlier asking, you know, we had a poll question, is Golden State bad for the NBA? Is Kevin Durant, since he went there, bad because they haven't had a series go to six games and it doesn't look like this one is going to, or the NBA Finals will? And I understand the people that argue, you know, look, they built through the draft. They convinced a player to take far less money than he could make and come join us. These guys are all unselfish in their salary needs. So what's there really to hate? You hate their dominance. And if it's your team that's dominating, then you don't mind it because you're enjoying every moment of it. But we have this with every team in professional sports. When the Yankees won all those World Series titles at the end of the 90s, people couldn't stand them. Somebody else, when Arizona won, I know that was strange because it was after 9/11, but it was like a relief that they didn't win their fourth straight World Series.
Sorry to cut you off, but I would just follow up what you're saying. I know the Yankees swept the Padres, but they also had a pretty good battle in some of those others. When was the last time we saw a team this dominant? There's a difference between winning consecutively and then being dominant while you're doing it.
And that's where I think we could be, depending on how the rest of the NBA shakes out.
Right.
This could turn into the most dominating run we've ever seen in the history of the league. Because even when Jordan won 6 and 8, how many of those series were less than 5 games?
Well, none. The NBA finals. He never swept anybody in the
finals. Never swept somebody in the finals, and I believe all of them won at least 6. I think everybody won at least 2 games in the NBA Finals.
The Blazers did. I think the Lakers did, but they were really banged up.
Sure, I know. Utah did.
Phoenix did, and Seattle did.
So none of them went less than 6 games.
None of them went less than 6.
They won last year in 5. They're likely going to win this year again in less than 5.
Haven't been in a series in 6 games. Haven't even, in any round.
Right, in any round. So we're on the brink of one of these dominating runs where nobody can sniff them, and that's where I think it's bad. Where this ultimately could end up being a positive for the NBA. The sad thing we have to realize in Portland is there is no parity in this league, and there never has been parity in this league. To complain about it now is ridiculous because it's never existed. So, unfortunately, the best-case scenario now, if you're an NBA fan and you want to be more excited about this sport, is to hope that this happens in more cities. And I think we've already seen that trend kind of in an uptick of Chris Paul wanting, you know, hey, I can't win in L.A. Send me to Houston. Pair me with James Harden. Maybe I can win. It is going to take basically the top 30 to 40 players in this league acknowledging, A, I don't mind not being the face of a franchise. I don't mind not making the supermax, whatever Blake Griffin's making, $40 million a year, whatever crazy number it is. My ultimate goal is to win championships and to beat Golden State. And if you have a strong collection of the top 40 players in this league, all acknowledge that. There are teams out there that have a good base built, that have financial flexibility, that can add multiple stars. And then maybe you can entertain a conversation about somebody beating Golden State. The sad part is that ruins parity for, 25 of the NBA cities. But that's kind of the way the NBA has always been. And I'm at this point, I kind of hope we go that direction, that you create 4 or 5 super teams with the best players in the league and then let them duke it out come conference finals time.
All right. There's 2 texts that just came in on the fan text. I want to read them and get to those, and then we'll get to the Michael Jordan documentary that was announced today. We'll do that next. Dirt and Sprague on the Fan. All right. I want to read these 2 texts at 55305. Somebody said, do you discredit the Golden State run due to their all-star roster? And I know for some Warrior fans out there, which, by the way, I guess this happens with every team when they become really good, is how sensitive the fan base can get.
Embrace the hate, man.
Like our buddy Matt Sprecher is a big Warrior fan.
Huge.
I mean, he's been a Warrior fan forever.
Yeah, he's from the Bay Area.
He's not a bandwagon guy. But, like, he responded in one of my tweets last night, was like, 3 of the 4 organically put. It's like, okay, but I didn't say anything about that.
Right.
I didn't say, oh, they created this super team. I didn't say that. They've done an incredible job. You have to give them credit. And that's where I would say on that. I don't discredit it. Even though they got Kevin Durant, I can't blame the team for that. If you're going to be upset about anything in that situation, it's KD.
Yeah, it's just at Kevin Durant.
Because I don't know about you, but like when you grow up and your team wins and you're a kid playing pickup, you're always switching your teams. Like, oh, this isn't fun anymore. Kevin Durant basically did that. He said, I want to make a team that nobody can beat, and I'm going to be okay doing that. That's on Kevin Durant.
Right.
Golden State drafted 3 phenomenal generational talents that put them together, and they have the right mental makeup to make that great team.
Right.
They won 73 games without Kevin Durant. I don't discredit a damn thing that this team does, even with the addition of KD. And then the other one And I think this could be a ranging opinion for some. Somebody said they are unbeatable. They are bad for the NBA. Now, as defeated as I may sound as a basketball guy, I would pump the brakes on saying bad for the NBA in the sense of, I know it was bad last year. I know it feels bad this year. And as we pointed out, the future could be this too.
It's all bleak. There's no hope.
But let's also not forget there have been other teams in the NBA that have had long stretches of winning. Now, dominance is a different thing. I don't think we've seen a team be this dominant. If they go on to win every series in five games or less, and it happens for the next year or two, I don't think we've seen that stretch since the Celtics in the 60s.
Probably not, no.
And how many teams were in the NBA in the 60s? Like eight? So I think that's next level stuff we haven't seen. But ask yourself this. If you're old enough to remember, how many teams did you think realistically were going to beat Jordan's Bulls? Like, serious question. Did you really think Portland was going to win? Portland fan out there that remembers the NBA Finals in 92. Laker fan without Worthy and Scott.
That year was different because of how banged up they were.
They were so banged up. You didn't think then. Phoenix, maybe, but that was Charles Barkley, Dan Marley, and Kevin Johnson, and it was still Jordan going for his third.
Well, in the second go-around, I think I gave Seattle and Utah a puncher's chance. They weren't the favorite. I didn't expect them to win.
Nate McMillan was banged up, and Gary Payton had a calf injury, and so I didn't think they had a chance. And then Utah, I actually didn't think Utah could beat them. 98 was their best bet, and if they would have got to Game 7, I think they could have. But they didn't get to Game 7, so...
No, they couldn't.
It's a moot point.
Well, and I see what you're saying, and that's... I mean, Jordan, that's one of the most dominant runs we've ever seen in the league, what Chicago did in the 90s. The difference, I think, is people still were interested to watch and care. And look, if LeBron is in the NBA Finals again this year, then I'm sure the ratings will be great again, at least for the first two games, until Golden State blows them out in back-to-back, and then slowly people stop watching. It was never this hopeless, though. Like, as good as Jordan was and as dominant as Jordan was, I didn't go into seasons just basically saying, what's the point? We know Chicago's going to win. I expected Chicago to win. I thought that they were going to win, but I did at
least... So what's the difference then?
Because there is zero hope right now. Literally zero hope right now. And people have tried to argue all season, Houston's got a chance.
Right.
No, they don't. They don't have a chance. There is zero hope.
So what's the difference in hope during a Jordan
10%
era?
And zero is at least there's 10%. So you're saying there's a chance. It's Dumb and Dumber. And right now, I refuse to believe any argument that any team can beat Golden State.
Well, take Celtics Lakers in the 80s. Right? I think, what was it, one or two of those years in that entire decade, the Lakers were in the finals every year minus 2 years.
It was the same matchup every single year, but at least you had, I mean, that was boring, I'm sure, for 90% of NBA fans.
Well, but it didn't. That's what made the league, and funny about this.
Boring's not the right word. You didn't have hope in 90% of NBA cities because you knew it was going to be Boston, LA. But this is what I'm saying can end up being good for the NBA right now, is it was back and forth. Like, if Philly adds Kawhi Leonard and LeBron James in the offseason, all right, here we go. Lace them up. Let's see who can win. That's going to be your NBA's finals matchup for the next 5 years, and it's going to go back and forth.
Right? Are people going to react that way, though, Dirt? Because this seems to be a day and age where people live through the Jordan era, people live through the 80s Lakers-Celtics era, and I don't know, maybe you didn't have an outlet for it, but the complaining, the bitching and complaining about it, it seems like it just picks up now. Oh, if LeBron goes to Philly, it's going to be, oh, here we go. Philly and Golden State in the finals. Here we go. Don't care. Well, but the 90s were Jordan and Houston. That's the 90s right there in a nutshell. The 80s were the Lakers and Celtics. So you're basically talking about four teams. One won two titles. The others, I mean, really three teams in 20 years. And people revere those decades as maybe the best for the league. And three teams.
Yeah. And I see what you're saying. I think it's a vocal minority for the most part that complains because the ratings the last couple of years in the NBA Finals have been through the roof. And the ratings in the regular season continue to grow. So the NBA is not dying. It's not terrible for the product because you've at least had more people watching and viewing your sport the last couple of years. that's where this year feels a little different to me. If it's Boston and Golden State, I just don't think that intrigues many general sports fan. NBA right. diehard will watch, and people will want to see Golden State blow them out for a cup. And Boston will rope in some national attention because they're the Celtics. But the ratings will go down without LeBron James. There's just a difference. I think the last time I felt this way, to be honest with you, and even they came close to losing some series, what was the Kobe Shaq Lakers. Like the last time I had this helpless feeling, but even they, I mean, Portland pushed them to a game seven, obviously, in the conference finals. You felt like there was a chance Sacramento, was it back-to-back years in the conference finals? Sacramento had a puncher's chance at knocking them out. It was mainly when they got to the NBA finals and, you know, played Philly or played Indiana. You're kind of like, ah, there's no chance here. What was the other one? New Jersey, played the Nets. Like, all right, this is going to be a bloodbath. But at least you had exciting conference finals. And it felt like we were going to have that this year. And look, maybe we're way overreacting to one game and Houston comes back and wins game two by a sizable margin.
Are we really overreacting?
I'm not willing to believe it until I see it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a tough part. All right. We have a lot to get to in hour number two. The NBA draft lottery is tonight, talking about somebody trying to build their team organically. Somebody's hoping the ping pong balls bounce their way. If you can think about the Blazers draft needs, would you like to see them be active during the NBA draft? Because they have the 24th pick in the draft this year. We'll get to that a little bit. We got NFL true or false. We got a loaded second hour. Dirt and Sprague back with more on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.